This DJ Kirk State. When I need info on today's important events, I tune into Block Report Podcast with my man, Tafari XL. Let's go.
TK Visions Beats.
It's Tafari XL.
TK Visions Beats. TDK Visions Beats.
Welcome, welcome everyone to the Block Report Podcast. And I am your host, Tafari XL. You are now tuned in to the livest podcast for the block, for the streets, for the people. I made that claim myself. Don't mind me. Hey, I'm using both hands to pat myself on the back. But check it out. Before we get into all of that stuff, I want to let you guys know how you can get in tune and get in touch with the podcast. The podcast is on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and several others. Just go ahead, go to Google and type in the Block Report Podcast. Also, you can reach out to us via the email, the Block Report Podcast at gmail.com. And you can just, you know, shoot us questions, send us information, topics that you might want to like to hear on the podcast. I'll review them and check them out. I mean, I'm still going to talk about what I want to talk about, but I'm not against hearing what the people, especially the viewers and the listeners of the podcast, have to say. So this is an interactive thing. It's not a, although it's set up right now as a monologue, my thing, as far as me just being here talking and sharing information, I do want it to ultimately be an interactive situation. So I would like to hear from you what your thoughts are on some of the content and what we're bringing to the table, if you're enjoying it or not. We also have a new portion where if you tune into the podcast, there may be, if you see a question symbol on there, you can go ahead and answer maybe certain questions that I have on there and give a reply. You can also donate to the podcast via on Spotify and such. So there's a lot of things that's going on. Pardon me, guys. But what I'm going to get into, we're going to go ahead and on this particular podcast episode, we're going to follow up on a previous story that we had spoke on a couple of weeks ago or so, and a story about Peter Spencer, who a Jamaican immigrant who was killed on a supposed hunting trip that he went on out there in, I think it's Venango County or Venango County, whatever, out there in Pennsylvania. So, yeah, Venango County. So, we're going to speak on that and give some updates on what's going on with that. But before I do that, what I would like to do is I'm going to take some time. And if you're serious people, you won't mind what I'm about to do. But if you're not a serious person and you're looking for some sort of gags, entertainment, giggles, and all of that type of stuff, then this may not be for you. But if you're a serious person and you're looking to be informed and equipped with the knowledge and information you need in order to articulate your point and address whatever is bothering you, and in this case, if it's bothering you that black people that have been murdered by the police or other individuals deputized by the police or other factions of the United States government who have not been charged with hate crimes, if that's bothering you, then what we're going to do is we're going to talk about we're going to go into what hate crime laws are. The because if a black person apparently if a black person has argument or with another person of another race, they can be charged with hate crimes. Or if they have words with the person, they can be charged with hate crimes. But however, these individuals that take a black person's life, they are not charged with hate crimes. Now, here on the Black Report podcast, we have been on the understanding that the laws that are on the books are laws that are not meant to be, that are not equally applied. The laws that are on the books are meant, they're put there for the sole and strict purpose of punishing black people. That's why a black person with possession of drugs gets a 2 to 5 year sentence, even if it's their first time in jail. Whereas a non-black person can go in with the same crime of drug possession and with more drugs than the black person and get drug rehab. That's why people like a Brock Turner can get caught in the act of rape and get no jail time. That's why someone like a Peter Liang can take the life of someone and of a black person and get no jail time. So, because the laws that are on the books are meant, the laws that are on the books for the United States government are on there meant for the sole purpose of only punishing black people and giving them the harshest punishment possible. So we're going to talk about what hate crimes are. We're going to talk about hate crime laws, actually, not hate crimes, hate crime laws. And then we're going to get into the updates on the Peter Spencer case. And one of the reasons for doing this is because we've had the conviction of the Ahmaud Arbery killers, those three white men down there in Georgia that were convicted and given life sentences on the state charges. And then the federal government, but they weren't charged with hate crime laws under the state. And then the federal government had an opportunity to charge them with hate crime laws, and they did some funny stuff with that. There's others out there that have reported on that. And I may get into that a little bit, or we may have to do a part two to this to follow up on that. But I will give you some footnotes and things to research and look at, possibly. If you want to get more information. In particular, there was a, well, before I get to that, and also the family of, some of the family of Peter Spencer have also voiced that this is a hate crime. So since this is something that's going on, I mean, you can get charged with a hate crime for knocking over a menorah at a synagogue. But a black person gets killed in a racially motivated murder, and there's no hate crime charges. So that's why we're going to go ahead and we're going to read the laws. I'm going to reread the laws on the books as they are so that everyone can be clear on what the laws are. And then you can know exactly what you're talking about and what you're advocating for when you're out there. You might think it's very simple, Some people may be sort of confused. They hear it and they hear the terms bandied about and spoken of, but may not be fully and thoroughly clear on how it is to be used or how it can be either defended or defeated. So in order for us to do that, we will look into what the hate crime law says. Also, this information I'm giving to you is from justice.gov/CRT. I don't know why they are. Oh, Civil Rights Division. And /hate-crime-laws. So you can Google that and look it up. General Information Office of the Assistant of the Attorney General. Leadership, Kristen Clark. That name is very important because we're going to get into it, what she had done in the Ahmaud Arbery case. She was the lawyer that went ahead and lied and said that the Ahmaud Arbery's family in the federal court said that their family and then the lawyers had agreed to a plea deal for Travis McMichael, which is one of the three murderers of Ahmaud Arbery. So Kristen Clark is the leadership on the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice, United States Department of Justice. And you can contact her and the Civil Rights Division at 202-514-3847. Telephone device for the deaf, TTY 202-514-0716. Okay, what we're going to do, we're just going to take a brief break right here for an ad, and then I'll get into the information. So just bear with me. It's really brief, and we'll go ahead and get into that. And I'll be right back with the information. Okay, welcome. You're still here listening to the Block Report podcast with your host, Tafari XL. So check it out. So we left off about to get into the hate crime laws and what it says and about hate crime laws on the United States Department of Justice website. And I took a break because this information for some people can be mundane or taxing, and it's just a couple of paragraphs, but I wanted to give you guys some time, you know, to maybe grab a snack, grab a drink or something, and get settled so you can go ahead and get ready to get in and absorb this information that I'm bringing. So about hate crime laws. Since 1968, when Congress passed and President Lyndon Johnson signed into law the first federal hate crime statute, the Department of Justice has been enforcing federal hate crimes laws. The 1968 statute made it a crime to use or threaten to use force to willfully interfere with any person because of race, color, religion, or national origin, and because the person is participating in a federally protected activity, such as public education, employment, jury service, travel, or the enjoyment of public accommodations, or helping another person to do so. So that means, you know, just living life and being out there, someone interfering with you just because you went out to go have lunch or you're using a bathroom. That means this stuff happened in 1968. And if you're not familiar with what the climate was in the United States at that time, they had separate water fountains. Water fountains for white people, water fountains for colored people. So there was the United States, as much up until 1968, literally had all the earmarks and hallmarks of an apartheid state. And that's the way they were living. And so they were living, they were doing very not better at all than South Africa. So now, beyond whatever sort of so-called mumbo-jumbo, whatever history, fantasy that they want to tell you, that's why a lot of these people now, and what happens is with the emergence of Donald Trump as president and his rhetoric, which he came out with, it was all about trying to return people to a time when they could go ahead and hurt and harm black people with impunity. And that's what you're seeing some of these wacko racist people in government that are trying to gin these races up that they know that are out there. But let's get back into the information. That's why, and I'll get into it a little bit more about how this goes. So I'm going to try to weave this all in. So y'all just hang in there with me and we're going to get it all in there. All right. In 1968, Congress also made it a crime to use or threaten to use force to interfere with housing rights. Black people were being redlined, were not able to get loans, could only live in certain areas, redlining, because of the victim's race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. In 1988, protections on the basis of familial status and disability were added. So 20 years later, they added basis of familial status and disability into that act, the Hate Crimes Laws and Act. In 1996, Congress passed the Church Arson Prevention Act, 18 U.S.C. Section 47. Under this act, it is a crime to deface, damage, or destroy religious real property or interfere with the person's religious practice in situations affecting interstate commerce. The act also bars defacing, damaging, or destroying religious property because of the race, color, or ethnicity of persons associated with the property. Now, this is something that people like the ADL or any sort of Jewish community or Jewish religious folks, they use that part of the law a lot because I just mentioned that in the earlier part, if you were to deface or damage any property at a synagogue, I mean, they would charge you with a hate crime. It's interesting how, as a side note, and then we'll get back into this. It's interesting how, you know what? I'm not going to go there right now because I don't want to take us off onto a tangent. So just pardon me. We're going to get back into this information. And I'll come back around and then gather my thoughts and then give it to you guys here. So in 2009, Congress passed the President Obama signed the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act. And that was in 2009, expanding the federal definition of hate crimes, enhancing the legal toolkit available to prosecutors, and increasing the ability of federal law enforcement to support our state and local partners. This law removed then existing jurisdictional obstacles to prosecutions of certain race and religion motivated violence and added new federal protections against crimes based on gender, disability, gender identity, or sexual orientation. Now, one of the things, see, it says here that it helped. All it did, I'm not a law expert, but I believe I have a good understanding of the law and the laws that are on the books. And the problem is not the laws. The law is on the books. Sometimes there are certain things that make the hurdle of proving certain things in law to difficult. You know, so like anything that says like sort of like to prove criminal intent, especially whenever it comes to like a racially biased situation, especially when the situation is where either the black person being a victim and the aggressor and the perpetrator being a non-black person, it always seems to be really difficult to prove this sort of racial bias or racial criminal intent. So there are times when there's hurdles to prove certain things in the law because they word it in such a way, but the laws are there that to prove when, even when the evidence is there to prove that the law needs to be, this law is a clear violation of the law, and therefore the legal system needs to do its job and ensure that this person is prosecuted for this crime, they always there's always some sort of difficulty or hang up about the situation. So they keep trying to claim that they're amending and doing stuff to the law and setting the law a certain kind of way. But a lot of the times what I find is that what they're actually doing is that they're making the law adjusted to make sure that criminals of racial bias, especially those that are on an anti-black criminal bias, have it easier to escape punishment from the law. But that's just my opinion, you know, and I'm not telling you to believe what I'm saying. The evidence is out there for yourself. So let's continue. So, and in part, what you see here is that what they show is that Obama, what he did, even though under his time as president, you had the police arrest Henry Louis Gates, who was a professor at Harvard, and all of this outside of his own house. And you had, which that wasn't a big thing, that don't affect the majority of black people, but I'm just using that as an example. That's a proxy situation, an example of something. Well, maybe not so much a proxy, but just an example. And you had the murder of Trayvon Martin, and you had several other murders and killings of other young black men. And Obama, where was his signature in his pen? Where was his fervor to jump up and make a more robust hate crimes law to defend defend black people and to punish these murderers? He wasn't there. But what he was there for is this. He was there to do what I just read to you, what he did. It was to go ahead and added federal protections against crimes based on gender, disability, gender identity, or sexual orientation. That's what it was about, even though there was already laws on the books for disability. So he added new protections. But okay, fine. Maybe there was more protections that be needed. Now, gender identity or sexual orientation, that's because he was building up his thing for the LGBT community. And, you know, he basically was the LGBT president. And as far as that was the constituency, when he was telling black people, I can't be a president just for black people, I gotta be president for all the people. But he specifically put laws in to protect the LGBT. All right, so let's continue. Before the Civil Rights Division prosecutes a hate crime, the Attorney General or someone the Attorney General designates must certify in writing that, one, the state does not have jurisdiction, two, the state has requested that the federal government assume jurisdiction, three, the verdict or sentence obtained pursuant to state charges did not demonstratively indicate the federal interest in did not demonstratively vindicate the federal interest in eradicating bias-motivated violence, or four, a prosecution by the United States is in the public interest and necessary to secure substantial justice. So what they do is, so they say, okay, well, either the state has jurisdiction, does not have jurisdiction, so then therefore the federal government comes in to prosecute the hate crime. The state has requested the federal government assume jurisdiction. I mean, the state says, listen, we're not going to do this hate crime thing, so you, the feds, got to do it. Or three, the verdict or sentence obtained pursuant to the state charges did not. All right. So the verdict did not vindicate the federal interest in eradicating bias motive, meaning that the verdict did not rule out that it was that there was that this situation was also indeed a hate crime, whatever they ruled the verdict on the crime. So they said that, yes, it's a crime committed here, but it doesn't rule out that there was a hate crime and we weren't, and being that the state, however the judge gave whatever the information is for the jury to rule on, the jury could not rule on the hate crime, and therefore it needs to be in the hands of the federal government and they need to take it on. And also that the prosecution is in the public interest and necessary to secure substantial justice. So that's how it goes for what it says about hate crimes. Then here you have the they give all the different statutes: conspiracy against rights, violent interference with federally protected rights, damage to religious property, church arson prevention act, criminal interference with right to fair housing, and the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act of 2009. Now, what I found interesting, as I said, I already gave you guys the link and the name to the page for you to go ahead and find this information and read up on it on your own. So I'm not going to go through all of these different ones, but I will point out one that I found interesting to me that might be kind of benign or not all that interesting to most people when they check it out. But this is very important because conspiracy is a crime. If one gets convicted of the crime of conspiracy, that could add like 20, 30 years onto your sentence. So one of these particular sections in the hate crimes laws is conspiracy against rights, 18 U.S.C. Section 241. This statute makes it unlawful for two or more persons to conspire to injure, threaten, or intimidate a person in any state, territory, or district in the free exercise or enjoyment of any right or privilege secured to him or her by the Constitution of the law or the laws of the U.S. Now, in many cases, this particular section could be used by a lot of prosecutors to prosecute a lot of people that go about committing crimes, harming black people in this country. Right now, currently, the case of Peter Spencer, I think, would be one of them. And obviously, the case of Ahmaud Arbery is one. And even in the cases when the police go out and they murder black people, because it's never just a police officer by themselves. This particular one, especially in these cases, the statute makes it unlawful two or more persons to conspire to injure, threaten, or intimidate a person in any state. So all it needs is two people to agree that, yeah, we're not about to go ahead and, you know, we're going to violate this person. Now, you don't need, to me, in this particular case, you don't need like a verbal agreement. You don't need to catch them on tape. All you got to do is see that, okay, one person takes on the opportunity to harm, injure, threaten, or intimidate a person, and the other person is complicit in the act. The other person that's with that person doing those actions under the color of law, with the badge, in an official capacity, state paid, they can be charged with that. See, the thing that I've been saying is that the laws are on the books, but they're not enforcing them to protect black people. So when you see the outcomes that you see, it's not because there's no laws protecting people. The laws are there. They're just not meant to protect black people. They're just not there to meant to be in the favor or of protecting black or used in the protect of to protect black people. So, we're gonna go into we're almost We're almost there to wrap up. I don't mean to be here too long, but you are listening to the Block Report podcast with Tafari XL, and we're going to get into the latest information up to date that we can have on the story about Peter Spencer. All right, guys. So now we're gonna go on to the update on Peter Spencer, the Jamaican immigrant who was murdered out there in Pennsylvania with four who went on a supposed camp hunting trip with a co-worker, a white co-worker, and some of that co-worker's friends. He was shot 9 times, several times, in the back, in the chest and in the buttocks, and also a shot went through his neck. That was according to one autopsy report. There has been 2 autopsies, and we're going to get into that. But what I want to get into first is the reporting that I saw in an article from the Gleaner, which is a Jamaican publication that reports on news articles and such, on news, on the news. And just to show you that, I was just so surprised that they had literally no pushback. This seemed like some, you know, I don't even believe this person actually talked to anybody in official capacity. They probably just pasted this thing together. So I'm going to start here in the middle of, matter of fact, let's start at this point. Committed to seeking justice. They broke it down where, like, they try to break it into different pieces and gave it all these different titles. But they go ahead. Oh, matter of fact, let's look at this. All right. So Spencer, 29, of Pittsburgh, was found with several gunshot wounds. His body was found on the front lawn of the property. The police had not given a motive for the killing of Spencer. They haven't even they didn't give a motive. They went ahead and detained some people, but then charged nobody and released everybody. And someone got shot and killed 9 times. Okay. If this is not sounding odd to you, then I don't know. The police have not released a full police report, nor have they released the killer's name or filed charges. They haven't filed charges. Someone is dead. People was there. Shot and killed 9 times. No charges. The police say they are still investigating and requested that the public has patience as they gather the autopsy, ballistic lab, and toxicology reports. Well, that's what the white folks like to say all the time. Have patience. So there have been some police officers that were shot and killed recently. I believe we should have patience. Biden will be coming to New York soon to speak with the New York City mayor. I believe he should speak about having patience. Till we figure out what's going on. We don't really know what's going on yet. Here's a man that shot and killed nine times and murdered, and he's dead, and they're talking about 2 months later to have patience. Speaking with the Gleaner, Allen called the investigation ongoing and said that at the conclusion of the investigation, the district attorney for the area will decide if charges will be filed after reviewing the evidence gathered. Now, Allen is a Corporal Aaron Allen, liaison officer at the Heritage Affairs section of the Pennsylvania State Trooper. Now, this was the question. Oh, they wrote this. The question being asked is if the killing. So they asked this question, which was good part. They asked this question. Is if the killing of Jamaica-born Peter Spencer is being investigated as a hate crime. Corporal Aaron Allen declined comment on that score. The Heritage Affairs section investigates hate crimes in the state. See, here's the thing. If he's a part of the Heritage Affairs section and they're looking into that crime, obviously you should be looking into seeing if it's a hate crime. But what they're probably looking to do is to try to bury it and not call it a hate crime. So that's what they're probably doing. Then this article was produced 2 to 3 days ago on the Gleaner's website. In an interview with the Gleaner, Allen said that he expects the investigation into Spencer's killing to be wrapped in the next 4 to 6 weeks. He did concede that the investigation is looking to see if bias was a motive in the killing. 4 to 6 weeks. This happened about 2 months ago. So it's going to take them 3 to 4 months to figure out what's going on. That's what they're trying to say. This is where I find the part where they had no pushback in the Glen. We have been told that there was an altercation, this is them saying what their parents were told. Isilda Spencer Henry and Conroy Spencer said that they have not been given a satisfactory explanation about their son's killing. We have been told that there was an altercation and the people who shot him were in fear for their lives. Okay, so this is the narrative for which the suspected white supremacists have started to build and develop, because what they're trying to do is they're trying to get all of those white kids off of murder charges for killing that black man. That's what they're working on doing. When you hear them say stuff like this, and the people who shot him were in fear for their lives. All right, now let me get to finish what the parents were saying. But this makes no sense, as he was with 4 other white men when he was shot and killed, Spencer Henry said. Now, they sound funny when they say that, but I don't know. You know, it's written in a funny way. Who knows what the article... Because to me, I get what they're saying. It makes no sense. You're with 4 other people. Why would they be in fear of their lives? But it does make sense once you understand white supremacy. They told the Gleaner that the 4 men who were with Peter were detained and taken into custody, but later released without being charged. Allen confirmed that the men were released after questioning without being charged while the investigation continues. So, this is the part where, like I said, that I don't understand. You know, there was no pushback. The Gleaner didn't say, what's going on? What's holding up the investigation? You don't see that question there. What sort of investigation they need to do? What's going on? Have they not carried out their questioning of the people that were there present at the time? Or what's going on? There was no sort of, what I don't see here is enough of a pushback. And you're just accepting what this person is saying as if he's a reliable and his word is gold. Speaking on that, remember earlier I was talking about Kristen Clark, the Assistant Attorney General, Civil Rights Division. And she, as I said, that she had went in there and lied and said that the family was willing to accept a plea deal. Ahmaud Arbery's family was willing to accept a plea deal. You got to stop. I don't know if this guy, Aaron Allen, was a black person or a white person. But what I'm saying is that when you're dealing with a system that has systematically produced non-justice in regards in any situation, when it comes into in the regards of black people, you must question everything, and you must be vigilant and stand up for getting justice for you and yours. You can't just accept what these people are saying. But I understand though why some people go that route. Now we're gonna go a little bit. We're going to probably wrap this up in a few. But I also want to make the point of there's the also in Connecticut, there were 2 women murdered, 2 black women murdered. And the police are sounding just like the police that just like the police in this case, except they're out here they're out here telling the people stuff about that it's a good man, a good guy, this guy is a good guy or some other crap. Here it goes. We're going to go ahead and I'm going to get to the article on that. And we're going to speak on that a little bit and then we're going to wrap things up here. So, initially I saw this story and it was one woman. And they seem to now say that it's really two women murdered by the same guy. But Connecticut woman found dead after Bumble date. Criminal investigation open. But hold on. Her family also reported that the police initially, like they the only way that they found out was that they went to the girl's where she was renting, and there was a note on the door, and the landlord is the person who informed them, not the police. So, Bridgeport, Connecticut. A police detective in Connecticut has been placed on administrative leave for mishandling the death investigation of a black woman who was found dead after a Bumble date, the city's mayor said. Lauren Smith Fields, 23, was found dead inside her apartment December 12th, almost 2 months ago. The medical examiner ruled her death an accidental overdose, saying fentanyl was found in her system, combined with prescription medication and alcohol. But Smithfield's family said she didn't take drugs and believed there was foul play in her death. Someone introduced those drugs to her system, and it wasn't her. We want answers right now, Darnell Crossland, the family's attorney, told WFSB. Crossland also said that cases about missing and dead black women like Smithfield's do not get the nationwide attention they deserve. People know black women, black girls have been going missing and haven't gotten any attention. And I think it's a boiling point, Crossland said. It's at a boiling point. We are just asking for process. That's it. Treat these cases like you would any others. Investigators said Smithfield's was on a date in her apartment on December 11th with 37-year-old Matthew LaFontaine. That's the white man she was on a date with, who she met on Bumble. Now, a man she met on the popular dating app Bumble. LaFontaine told police the two spent the night drinking, eating, and watching a movie. He told police that at one point during the evening, Smithfield's went outside to meet someone and later fell ill, but the two continued to drink. That sounds fishy. The detectives were suspended over concerns of racial insensitivity by families of two black women. Right. The Rawls family and Smithfield. The incident report shows that LaFontaine discovered Smithfield's not breathing the next morning and called 911. LaFontaine has not been charged with a crime and is not considered a suspect. So he was there with her. She fell ill and this nigga stayed the whole night and he called police in the morning. Does this sound reasonable? You just met her on a date. And you're going to stay with her because she's sick or whatever. She went sick. Does this sound reasonable? What person wants to be on a date with somebody? If you're the person who's sick, why would you want anybody there with you that you just met for the first time? You're just on a date with them for the first time. And then I don't know what she's doing having the dude there at her place. But, okay. Whatever. Anything. All right. LaFontaine has not been charged with a crime and is not considered a suspect. Huh? Most people are considered a suspect if they're the last known person there with the person who is now deceased. That's just plain and simple. At the demands from the family, a criminal investigation was opened January 25th in Smithfield's death, more than a month after her body was discovered. Wow. On Monday, Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim announced that a police detective was put on leave for his handling of the case. Put on leave? He should be probably put in jail. The Bridgeport Police Department has high standards for officer sensitivity, It's not about sensitivity. He was clearly trying to help somebody cover up a murder, especially in matters involving the death of a family member, Ghanem said. It is an unacceptable failure if policies were not followed. To the families, friends, and all who care about the human decency that should be shown in these situations, in this case, by members of the Bridgeport Police Department, I am very sorry. Your apology feels like nothing. I mean, whatever. He had to do what he had to do because he's a politician to say that. But listen, you're the mayor. You're the mayor. You're like the head cop because you tell the police commissioner what the hell to do. So you could do more than that. A rally was held in Bridgeport on Sunday, which would have been Smithfield's 24th birthday, with marchers demanding to know if LaFontaine played a role in her death. Supporters led by Crossland said evidence, including bloody bed sheets and a semen-filled condom, was compromised due to an inadequate response by the Bridgeport Police Department. Oh, we're not surprised. LaFontaine's attorney, Peter, whatever this guy, Carayannis, told News 12 Connecticut that his client has fully cooperated with police and he is no longer the focus of the investigation. As we know, the DA is involved. The DEA is involved, and they will help local authorities investigate the matter and get to the bottom of what happened to Lauren, Carayannis said. Carayannis also disputed social media claims that LaFontaine is a married man in his 50s, clarifying that he is 37 and single. We will continue to cooperate with authorities to help definitively determine what happened to Lauren on that evening. And we want her family to find some peace after this heartbreaking loss, the lawyer said. Smithfield's family is suing a Bridgeport Police Department. They're suing the Bridgeport Police Department, saying it has been racially insensitive from the outset. A detective allegedly told Smithfield's mom at one point to stop calling. The family also said police did not notify them of Smithfield's death. Instead, they said they found out from her landlord, who put a note on the locked door of Smithfield's home. The mayor said in a statement that the way the family was notified is concerning. Really? Do you think so? Like, oh, wow, the way they were notified, it was so notified, they weren't notified. I share concerns echoed by many about the amount of time and manner a family is informed of a loss. Death notification should be done in a manner that illustrates dignity for the deceased and respect and compassion for the family, Ghanem said. Ghanem added that he plans to work with police to make appropriate changes to department policies and practices regarding notifying family members of a death. Blah, 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 blah. That's all he's saying. Bridgeport police are asking anyone with information to contact Lieutenant Charles Johnson at 203-449-2195 or the Bridgeport Police Tips Line, 203-576-TIPS, T-I-P-S. Look, how much more evidence do you need from me to let you know that when it comes to black people, the laws that are on the books, they only apply when it comes to punishing black people? They have nothing to do with protecting and enforcing the protection and rights and freedom of black people to not be harassed, harmed, and have their rights violated. These are sad, sad stories, sad, sad times, and, you know, hey, take it for what you want, but here's the case. So, look, this is the Block Report Podcast. I am your host, Tafari XL. So, as a recap real quick, you got a better understanding of the laws of hate crime laws. You can also use the link which I gave and issued in the earlier part of the podcast to actually get yourself more familiarized with the hate crime laws. And also, if you want to, call up the Civil Rights Division and give them your two cents and your piece on the move by Kristen Clark, the Assistant Attorney General, to with that dirty move that she did. behind the backs of the Ahmaud Arbery family. And unfortunately, that woman is of Jamaican descent, which is a total disappointment. But, you know, apparently these people, you know, they put their job before their dignity and their pride. And people like that that do that are something else. They're a special kind of people. And justice and what's right and the protection for people that look like them. These are a special kind of people, but not my kind of people. But anyway, this is the Block Report Podcast with your host, Tafari XL. Remember, you can get in touch with the get in touch with us via email at theblockreportpodcast@gmail.com. And you can tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, and several of your other favorite podcast streaming platforms. And we're out of here, and we'll be back with another Block Report sooner than you think. Peace.